Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Long before Gigi Hadid, Kendall Jenner, and Gisele Bündchen graced the runway of Fashion Week, there was Beverly Johnson and Naomi Ruth Sims. Naomi Ruth Sims was the first African-American model to appear on the cover of Ladies' Home Journal in 1968 and Life magazine in 1969. Beverly Johnson was famously known as the first African-American model on the cover of Vogue in 1974. In honor of Black History Month, EdgeExpo.com is offering a glimpse into the lives of eight Black fashion makers and Black influencers who use the power of fashion to transform their identity and culture. Fashion Culture, a Study of Eight, was curated by Rhonda Hill. She joins us now. So nice to have you, Rhonda.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Rhonda, this is a curated project that covers people and events of culture and historical significance between the years of 1880 and 1980. The photographs online are extraordinary, and we will link people to them at our website, hereandnow.org. But first, explain to us the inspiration behind the Study of Eight. What inspired you to do this?
Well, you know, for a long time, I've been meaning to do a project like this. It's always good to target it around the Black History Month time period. But it also ties in with the EDGE objectives and values, which is to showcase the work of those that are underrepresented. And so this project was, was a very in-depth study of how there's parts of history that we leave out. African-Americans have contributed to fashion in ways that we just don't know about. And I felt like I wanted to really let their voices be being heard.
Well, the Study of Eight is broken down into an eight-part series that begins with the cotton factory. Tell us why you decided to start there.
Well, when I was putting the Study of Eight together, the time period is against the backdrop of the Jim Crow era and the civil rights movement. So in this example of the cotton factory, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the good part was that Coleman Manufacturing Company was the only Black-owned and operated and employed Blacks within that cotton mill. So that was a progressive stance. The oppressed piece of it is the bad and the ugly. Discriminatory labor practices were well known back then against the Blacks, of course. The white mill owners really exploited cheap labor practices against the white employees that wanted to work. So they felt like in order to save costs, using Black labor at a lower cost would obviously save them money. The ugly part of it is that the white men in the community felt a need to say something and defend what they felt were privileged their wives and daughters, because female labor was cheaper. Their wives and daughters were working at these mills, and so they wanted to raise their voice and really push against this exploitation of using Black labor. This was a period in our time that, although you see progression, there is this oppressed discriminatory practices that were happening within the industry.
Explain the process behind this project, Rhonda, and why you chose to focus on the people that you did. Just some extraordinary people: W.E.B. Du Bois, Elizabeth Hobbs Keckley, Amanda Gorman. Tell me about them.
Well, what I wanted to do was touch on the different parts of our history over this 100 period time frame. And I wanted to acknowledge those that were pioneers, like the supermodels and the Black fashion designers. But I also wanted to highlight the events like Ebony Fashion Fair and the Battle of Versailles. So the first are those first Black fashion designers: Elizabeth Hobbs Keckley, Fannie Chris Payne, Ann Cole Lowe, and Zelda Valdez. What they did was they had power in creating fashion, and yet their own appearance and talent got them the clientele they sought. So they really use the power of dress, not only in their in appearance, but then obviously in their creations. And so they sought after society elite. So they kind of set the stage back then as far as those pioneers.
So people like Elizabeth Hobbs Keckley, who is best known as yes. Mary Lincoln's dressmaker and confidant. Yes. I mean, she did make a name for herself, but through the powerful Mary Lincoln.
That's correct. Yes. The others, for example, Ann Cole Lowe was known for creating the wedding gown and gowns for the bridal party for Jackie Kennedy. And here again, these women were far hidden from any kind of history, acknowledging their work until recent decades.
Mildred Blount made spectacular hats, and she was the first African-American member of the Motion Pictures Costumers Union.
Yes, yes. She actually did the work for the hats for that were worn by Scarlett O'Hara for Gone with the Wind.
Yes. You also included Amanda Gorman. And actually, you'd already written Study of Eight when you decided to include her.
Yes.
Because you,
yes.
like the rest of us, were blown away by her poetry, yes. by who she is.
Yes. The Study of Eight had been put to bed, and we were just in the editing process. And then when I saw her captivating poem, what it reminded me was that some of those verses that she had really identified with my desire and responsibility to bring this work to the readers.
Being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it.
I felt like that was very appropriate with what the work I was doing. So I was very touched by that.
Give me another example of someone from this Study of Eight.
Well, the Black supermodels, I think what's important about them is that the Black community did not have model representation in a mainstream fashion magazines until the horrible times of the 60s, when Danielle and Naomi and Beverly were the first Blacks to grace the covers. So finally, there was inclusion and respect, and the power of fashion neutralized those biases.
Mm.
Because when I think about this, and most people will think of this, about this, when you dress a Black model or a white model, you get the same outcome. You get fashion. And when you lay this up against what was going on at the time, the contrast is extraordinary. Danielle Luna is on the cover of Harper's Bazaar, January of 65, British Vogue, March of 66. And when you look at even the year of 1968, April and June were the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy. And also within that year, James Brown in August, who was, as most Blacks were fed up with what was going on as far as inequality, he released his popular hit song, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Say it loud! Say it loud! One more time!
All this was going on. Months later, November of that same year, Naomi Sims is on the cover of Ladies' Home Journal, and almost a year later on the cover of Life.
You spent 8 months working on this project. What struck you most about your findings?
I was enlightened. I was disappointed and disgusted at times. There was a lot of the history that I didn't even know about. And there was times when I stayed in character. Everything would be through the lens of what I was experiencing because I was born in the civil rights era. So I took myself back into those times because these stories haven't really come to life until really in the last decades. Mm. And I'm just now learning about the dynamic of what happened with how the American fashion system really turned the corner with the Battle of Versailles fashion show there in France.
And why was that so significant? What was it about that moment?
It was a game changer, not only for American fashion, but African-American models. The African-American designer, Stephen Burroughs, got a lot of press from that show. And fashion was literally on the front stage, but fashion and the Black models transformed the perception of American fashion and American Black culture. So this was an event that I really didn't have much knowledge about it. But because of the oral history and because of books that were written, and there's two documentaries out there, you know, I was able to learn a lot about this part of our fashion history.
And lastly, I know that there are important questions to still be answered about what the fashion industry can do to be more inclusive today.
There are. I'd say that I think the fashion industry has gotten lazy over time. The process is not that inclusive, not only in the BIPOC community, but in the underrepresented, those independents, the up-and-coming designers. My hope is that a study of eight is, you know, we can get beyond its reputation of fluff and frivolous and have more of an intelligent way at looking at fashion as a transformative piece in cultural identity and inclusion and respect and recognition.
Well, that's what you have done for us today. Rhonda Hill is the author of Fashion Culture, A Study of Eight. It's a curated editorial project advancing the study of African Americans' contribution to fashion history. Rhonda Hill, thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.